This episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Stay tuned for details of how to get a 10% discount. Coming up today, Twitter's emergency alert system comes to the UK after a lifetime of confinement to Japan, South Korea and the US. Plus, the extent of Google's renewed battle against online child abuse has been revealed, and we learn how the London Underground might be your next source for central heating. Plus, we look at what the deal is behind the bribe your way into a lover's life dating site Carrot Dating, and another source for totally uncomplicated, not at all questionable adult fun. All that and more coming up on today's show. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and interesting, from science and tech to questionable sexism and cat-based learning aids. I'm your host, Nate Langson. I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Olivia underscore Solon.
And I'm Liat Clark.
Listen to that voice. That's a sound I haven't heard for a while.
Yes, I've missed you.
Yes, well, we've missed you. We put out a nice little message last week.
Aww.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it. That's bad.
Well, I'm glad we put that effort
did
in.
Did you ask me to get better?
We just demanded that you did. It wasn't so much a request as it was
worked.
An order. It did
work. It was like within 24 hours.
Excellent. Well, let's get on with the news. So first up, bit of a big one this, Google's battle against online sex abuse, well, online child abuse, has been revealed.
Google already works with the Internet Watch Foundation to take down and report images of child sexual abuse online. But there was a demand for them to be doing more. And ahead of the Internet Safety meeting this week at Downing Street, Eric Schmidt, chief executive, penned an article in the Daily Mail explaining what Google's been doing to combat the problem. Now, the Daily Mail actually launched a campaign to ban online porn, so it's interesting he's gone there.
Nice that those two things have been mixed.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few blurred lines going on. But so Google has, first off, altered its search algorithm, which it does all the time anyway, but it's made a significant tweak, which means at least 100,000 queries related to child sexual abuse come up short. And 13,000 of those queries now prompt warnings from Google and charities saying where those individuals can get help. This is so far in only in English, but it's going to expand to 150 languages over the next 6 months. And they've also been promoting Microsoft's Photo DNA software, which they've been using for a while, which basically gives images that an employee identifies as illegal a unique marker, and the software can then run and identify, report and remove similar images. Now Google's launching something else which their YouTube engineers have developed, which is a very similar system but for video footage, and they're trialing that now. So they do look like they've been doing a lot, but they did say this is something they've only been working on for the last 3 months, so it is very much a reaction to the public pressure they've been put on by publications like the Daily Mail. And it came out of, I'm sure you read the very high-profile cases of two murders of two young girls, a 5-year-old girl and 12-year-old girl, at the beginning of the year. And it came to light that the perpetrators had been looking at images of sexual abuse perpetrated against children online shortly before the crime. And when you read some of the stories that came thereafter, they very much made this link that the actual act of looking at these images was causing these crimes,
as opposed to correlating with these crimes.
Yeah, exactly. And MPs came out saying things to a similar effect, and I don't think anyone was, you know, in the mood to say, where's the, you know, evidence for this, but obviously this is illegal material and more should be being done to get it pulled down.
There's also an slight educational factor in this, is that it's not just about saying get help. It's actually, I think, some of these warnings, these things like searching for this sort of stuff is illegal. Did you know this content isn't legal? Because, you know, to cover the fact that there may just be some
idiots
in the world who just for some reason don't understand this.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what, really? Oh, God, that's...
Yeah, having actual warnings, that's kind of bizarre. But
it's not just Google, though. I mean, Google's one, but I think Microsoft is doing a similar thing with Bing.
Yeah, well, Microsoft is working really closely with Google all through this, it looks like.
Yeah.
And they're actually heading up a project with Google and the IWF and the National Crime Agency in the UK, looking into peer-to-peer networks that are being used to share these images in the first place. And really, I think that is probably one of the most important things that they announced.
People aren't Googling for child pornography. I think if you're a professional child pornographer, you're going to be using Tor or other sort of peer-to-peer networks.
It's not going to stop the problem. This is what a few people who spoke out, well, I spoke to months ago, that were against it were saying. They were saying the figures from the IWF are like massively inflated if you look into them, and they've kind of manipulated the figures. But the thing is, no one's going to argue that there shouldn't be more done to this problem. But the point is, they're kind of, they've hooked onto search engines being somehow culpable by being complicit in allowing, you know, vulnerable people to look at images that then drive them to do horrible things they never would have done otherwise, which is not, obviously not what the major problem is. The major problem is people are creating these images.
Yeah, but I don't think there's anyone who would say that it's not a good idea to try and remove these images.
It is a good idea.
But I think what's interesting is they haven't really revealed what all these search terms are, and I'm not saying that any of these search terms, you know, might, I don't know what they are going to be, but obviously things like child pornography would come up and you get a message saying don't go there, but there's 100,000 of them.
Yeah.
So that encompass quite a lot of potentially wrongly identified material.
I think it obviously has, because Google actually, Eric Schmidt in this article in the Daily Mail said 100,000 queries that might refer to sexual abuse images. So they're covering their backs, and it is off the back of David Cameron basically presenting them with this list of words compiled by the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre and challenged Google to block them. And that's basically what they've done.
Well, we've got a full story with details on wide.co.uk. If you search Google's renewed battle, that'll work. Liv, Twitter's emergency alert system is going to launch in the UK. This is both A, good news, and B, a bit worrying. Like, why do we need an emergency alert system? In Japan and US, it's for earthquakes. We don't have those here.
It doesn't mean we don't have other emergency situations. There could be a gas leak. There could be a Great Fire of London, part two.
That's true.
London,
we haven't had one of those for a while.
Instead of alerting us to where we should be committing crimes, maybe where to avoid.
Fine. Yes. I'm convinced.
So let's step back a few paces. So these Twitter alerts, as you mentioned, have been used in emergency situations in Japan and the US, and I think they're also launched in Korea. But the idea is that certain kind of official accounts, verified accounts, can sign up to be able to send out push alerts to all of their followers in case of an emergency. Now, it's launched in the UK, and the sorts of organisations who've already signed up include police forces, the London Fire Brigade, the Foreign Office, and the Mayor of London's office. And what happens is, when there's an emergency, they can send out a tweet, and that tweet will go out to all their followers. It will be marked out with a special little orange bell, which obviously indicates emergency status, and so you can very quickly disseminate information in the case of a kind of mass level emergency.
It's a great idea, and extremely interesting that Twitter specifically is being used for this, as opposed to, say, Facebook, for example.
Yeah.
You know, because of the very nature of it. And there are a lot of systems like this in Japan that are based on alerts in phones. So, for example, the iPhone in Japan has a setting in it that is an earthquake early warning system run by the National Geological Survey, I think, in Japan. So basically, if an earthquake is detected over a certain magnitude, an alert goes out, and all phones that have this feature just start buzzing and pinging all at the same time to give you that few seconds early warning.
I think with this one, you do actually have to sort of sign up to receive these alerts as a user, so that you don't end up getting alerts about something going on in Edinburgh when you in fact live in London. So you do wonder how big the kind of adoption is going to be, but nevertheless, you know, Twitter's a very viral kind of platform, so it's likely stuff would, you know, quickly disseminate anyway.
Yeah. I got a bit of a fright actually the other day when someone had sent a tweet and a photograph that said nuclear explosion happened somewhere near somewhere in the north of England. I read that, I was like, what the hell? And I loaded it, and it was this image of what looked like a nuclear explosion. It scared the crap out of me. And then I realized it was just a photo of the weather. And it was just the sky just happened to look, because of the
glowing
position of the clouds, the dusky evening, it did look like a bomb had gone off.
But it gave me a separate alert system for all our disasters.
Well, yes, but so I don't know. I kind of think in a way this would be quite nice, because unless you see an official alert about a disaster, no need to panic.
All is good. Yeah.
Yes. I do wonder whether you could reply to these things, if, you know, in the future, and get advice, or, you know, what do I do? How do I contact? Like, could these alerts be sort of like a central point of...
I think they do feed out, they do use them to feed out general warnings and alerts and where to go for help.
Cool. Is that, when's that live? Has it gone live already?
They've all signed up. All those organisations have already signed up. But I just don't think we've had the emergency yet.
Oh, I see.
We won't know until...
Well, let's hope we never find out. Meow. That's the subject of the next story, sort of. What's meow in Spanish, actually, Love? You speak Spanish.
Meow.
I think it's something similar. I don't actually, can't remember.
Just meow with a Spanish accent.
Isn't cat universal?
That's a good point, actually.
What
cats
do you mean?
Speak the same language in Japan.
They all say meow.
Do they?
Mm.
Have you never heard a cat?
This is getting a bit random and bizarre. So Cat Academy, that's what we're talking about. It's a new service from memory and learning company Memrise, which aims to let people learn the basics of a new language, a new human language, I hasten to add, by using photos of cats. Now, this is a product that costs 99p. It's an app for iPhone. It will launch on Android at some point in the not too distant future. And it incorporates 1,000 photos of cats in various situations and positions and environments, and a word or phrase or sentence even accompanies it. The idea being that the association with the picture, the humour, the foreign language sort of helps combine in your brain to give you a sort of a accessible and fun way to start learning a new language. The first one they've done is Spanish, and Memrise as a business, if anyone doesn't know who Memrise is, they work with mnemonics and learning aids and things to help you learn languages, but also revision. You could go in and learn about history, you could learn about biology, chemistry. A lot of their courses seem to be free, but they're all based quite broadly around the same principle of association and image and things like that. So this is an extension of that, but it's quite accessible. And the idea, more broadly, is that it's a little bit... it's basically fun first, and learning is going on in the background.
I'm thinking back to GCSE French and things like... How do I buy a stamp at the post office? I'm just wondering how a cat would feature.
So, for example, you have a cat saying, La cuenta, por favor, which is the bill, please. And there's a picture of a cat with his little paw up with a plate in front of him.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is it doesn't seem to have the phonetic... pronunciation associated with it. I think would be quite a good addition to the app so that people knew how to say it, because reading Spanish isn't always 100% intuitive to how you might pronounce the words.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Ben Whiteley, who is the COO of Memrise, he popped in actually earlier this week to tell us about this. And he was actually just saying that, quote, it's 100% entertainment. So the idea is this is like a casual game. So you're, you know, it's 1,000 pictures of funny cats, basically. But the course that they've developed that goes behind those images is specially tuned and developed to give you the right sort of information at the right time, prompt you to see it again and again, because it helps reinforce that memory. Just as you might be about to forget, or when it thinks you might be about to forget, it will give you a prompt and you'll see that particular cat and that image again. It helps reinforce that. But it's meant to be fun. And I have to say, when I was doing the write-up for this, going through a giant folder of cat images, all sort of apparently saying things in Spanish, I found to be massively amusing.
Well, yeah. I mean, why do you stop learning a language? Because it's hard and boring halfway through, because you're sat there by yourself looking at something.
But it's more the other way around, actually. I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people who want to learn it, but it's such a time-consuming thing to do that it can be a huge barrier no matter how much you want to do it. I mean, I started learning Japanese, but even though I had this, I bought this Rosetta Stone software, I had a friend of mine who spoke fluent Japanese, and we, you know, we were doing it, but it gets to the point where it takes so much time, you have to be so immersed.
And it's such slow progress.
That it becomes unfeasible unless you basically chop a lot of other things out of your day-to-day life. So it's really interesting. It's very much about being fun, I think. And they're going to do other languages in the future. They're going to do Italian and German, I think Portuguese as well, French. And then it will also appear on Android. But one interesting fact is, you know the website I Can Has Cheeseburger?
Yeah.
The original source of memes. Oh, actually, not the original source of cat memes. That's probably 4chan, I think. A lot of the photos that are in this app are licensed from I Can Has Cheeseburger. Now, I did not know that I Can Has Cheeseburger actually had their own, like, copyrighted
original
cat
image
that they can then license out to third parties.
Yeah.
This is completely new information to me. But they also got a lot of people who had cats to set, to take a word and create a photo with their cat in it in these scenarios that they thought best represented that particular word or phrase, or sent in existing photos that they also thought fitted. And the people who had 10 or more approved got paid and were asked to do more. which I think was quite an interesting way.
I wonder if there's anything about cats that makes certain parts of the language absolutely impossible to represent, like loyalty or kind of like, well, there was friendliness.
There was one that
humility. Expressions, just happy or sad.
There was one example that Ben gave me, which is the word acumen. He's like, if you think of acumen, the first word that probably pops into your head along with it is business.
Business cat.
No, business acumen. Well, actually, that's a good point, business cat. But business acumen. Can you name another type of acumen?
No. Well,
I can't think of any other type of acumen apart from business acumen.
Can it not be any type of acumen?
It can be any, but it's just that's the most common context.
Okay. Well, if you know of other acumen, podcast@wide.co.uk. Liat, are you feeling hot?
I am actually. It's way too hot in here.
It is warm in here, isn't it? Well, there's good news if the answer was no and you were in a house and you were near the Northern Line.
Yes.
Is that not true?
Lucky, lucky Islington citizens. They are going to get cheaper, greener heating, or at least 500 households are. The Borough of Islington has announced that heat from a Northern Line vent will be piped into homes across Islington, saving money and 500 tonnes of emissions each year. They are going to harness what is called secondary heat in the city, a very popular practice these
very
days.
Nice.
And it's part of a commitment by Boris Johnson, Mayor of London, to start harnessing heat from industrial and commercial activities in the city and making use of these. So it's going to be captured straight from the vent and also an electrical substation and then pumped to homes in Islington by the Bunhill Heat and Power Network. These guys, they've been doing this for a while. They're kind of committed to providing green energy for 700 homes in the borough, and this will take them up to over 1,000. So it is a really interesting project. Mainly also because, not because of the Northern Line, but because of UK power networks, because they've got loads of substations over the city. And for them, they say this is a feasibility project and they could potentially provide a lot more homes with heat.
Great, great news. I mean, for anyone who has not been on the London Underground during the summer will not appreciate the face-melting heat. Oh. There was one day when someone, this summer just gone by, someone took a thermometer or measuring thing down there and it was hotter than early afternoon in Bali.
Yes, 34 degrees C.
Was it 34 down there?
The problem is they need to be able to store the heat from the summer in some shape or form and then use that in the winter.
It's never, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it's obviously generating huge amounts of heat all year round. And this isn't heat that's going to be coming. I mean, if you think that 34 degrees is when you're crammed into a carriage with loads of bodies and people.
Bodies?
And the heat, bodies, alive bodies.
Oh, okay.
And not corpses. And but this heat will be coming from a vent, so it's not like they're capturing that disgusting heat right in the moment when you need to get rid of it most.
This reminds me a little bit of the initiative they had they announced earlier this year, which was to take the fatbergs from the London sewers and burn them to create heat in East London. I thought that was a lovely
idea.
Have they
done that? Lovely. Yes. They rolled that out now.
It's about as attractive as having an earwax candle.
Yeah.
As long as it keeps you toasty. Yeah. They're doing a similar thing in Paris in the subways, and it's actually heat generated by bodies.
Alive bodies.
Alive bodies, again. Dead ones don't really generate much heat.
They do if you burn them.
If you burn them. All right, alive bodies standing crammed on the platforms and the trains. And that energy is going to be pumped to a social housing project that just happens to be adjacent to the station. That's the only reason they can do it, because there's this passageway. But that's pretty cool.
That is very cool. It's actually pretty hot. Well, we're going to take a quick word from this week's sponsor. But when we come back, we're going to learn all about carrot dating in WWWTF. This episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, online portfolio, blog, that sort of thing. Now, Squarespace is still offering free domain names if you take out a yearly plan, customizable website designs, drag-and-drop tools, 24/7 support from teams in Ireland, New York, you know the score. So, if you also want to sell physical goods, this is a pretty decent idea because you can sell that stuff straight through these templates. Digital downloads like music, books, written works, all that sort of stuff is baked into the CMS in the back end and into the templates that readers will see. So it's pretty easy. So Give it a go. You get a free trial starting today. You don't have to put in a credit card detail at all. £5 a month are what things start from price-wise, and whatever you go for, as a wider Cut UK podcast listener, you get a 10% jolly little discount. That's not bad. Use the code WIRED11 when you go to squarespace.com/WIREDUK and let them know that we sent you. Welcome back. Liv, what's welcome back in Spanish?
Bienvenido.
Ooh, that one. Well, what she said. We're going to talk about dating and quite controversial topics involving adult situations, or at least it has the potential to involve such things. In the first segment we're going to have, which is WWWTF. Carrot dating. Hot topic this week.
Yeah.
Very interesting story that you put together last week, quite long as well. As
yes.
a primer, what is Carrot Dating?
So it's a new dating app that lets members send each other bribes in order to capture the attention of potential suitors.
I see. So I go onto an app and say, hey, I can get you on the Wired Cut UK podcast.
Yeah, I think it's actually...
If you go out with me.
There's a pre-existing list of bribes you can use. So it's things like... Actually, most of them are pretty... aren't too concerning. There's things like, do you want a coffee? Do you want to go to the cinema? Do you want to have a meal? And then there's sort of more extreme ones like, do you want plastic surgery? And do you want to go on a shopping spree or come on a trip with me?
So you can't, you absolutely cannot make one up.
I don't think so, no.
Bummer.
But when it launched a few weeks ago, it got a huge amount of attention in the press, and lots of people were calling it very sexist and even facilitating prostitution. And if you looked at the promotional images for the app, the founder, Brandon Wade, was seen to be dangling actual carrots from a stick surrounded by a load of like attractive women wearing very little clothing, kind of fawning around him. It's kind of as if it was completely designed to infuriate the Daily Mail and many other people.
That is, unless it was incredibly ironic.
Yeah, and the App Store went as far as to ban the app after a couple of weeks having been on the App Store. And MIT even contacted Brandon to say they didn't want him wearing their t-shirt in his promotional pictures. However, although everyone seemed to kind of hate this app, everyone was writing about it. There were more than 3,600 reports about carrot dating in the media. And kind of looking at his businesses, I started to think that this wasn't just a coincidence. He's had a number of other businesses. Well, there's one which is a sugar daddy website called Seeking Arrangement, which lets women find rich men to take them on dates. And then there's another one where men pay for women to travel with them called Miss Travel. And so I wanted to speak to him to find out if this kind of negative attention was something that he was courting all along. And it turned out that it very much was. And I kind of, having been slightly infuriated as everyone else was when I heard about it, I kind of realised that actually we were all just falling into a very clever marketing trap. Because as the result of all this media attention, he ended up getting more than 90,000 downloads in just 2 weeks. What he told me was that when he first launched his first website called Seeking Arrangement, he ended up paying for a lot of advertising. But what he discovered was that actually it was the kind of media attention when media outlets would write about him, you know, being very critical of it, was when he'd get the most sign-ups. And so after he discovered this, he decided to employ many more PR people. I think 40% of his team is made up of PR people to make sure that the story gets out in the most provocative manner possible.
Well, he did pick the worst phrases for his press release. He was just taunting us.
He was saying stuff like, you know,
women like dogs. That was it.
Yeah.
Like, they like treats.
Yeah.
They do things for you when you give them to them.
Exactly. And even the very word bribery is a very kind of provocative word. But what he did point out to me, which I kind of appreciate, was that if a friend's trying to make him go out to dinner and he's like, oh, I don't really want to go out, they might say something like, oh, I'll bribe you with dinner. And it's not, you know, oh, I'll bribe you in a sleazy way. It's more of a kind of just a word that people use in a sort of, it's a, you know, cheeky word that you might use when you don't necessarily mean, you know, I'm going to actually, you know, if you don't do this, you're not.
But also a lot of people expect first dates, people to buy them dinner and things of that nature. I'm not saying that's necessarily right, but that happens all the time anyway.
So you ended up, I think, not getting on board with him, but you seem to appreciate a fair bit about what he was doing.
Yeah, he's trolling the internet and using that to generate sign-ups in a market that's massively undifferentiated. All dating sites are ultimately the same. So anything you can do to stand out, you should do. And whilst I, you know, don't necessarily condone the way that he's communicated it, I feel like he's done a good job in getting a lot of attention for
it. But the thing that stood out for me is that it does appear quite... You know, it's very much aimed at towards men, from what I could see. All these promotional pictures, It's not a lot of hunky dudes oiled up and ready for action.
Yeah.
You know, looking up at a woman dangling carrots.
That's partly because he very much puts himself at the centre of the story of his businesses. He talks about how unlucky in love he was personally as when he was younger, and that he launched these businesses to help people like him find love. And so because he's featuring in the images and he is a heterosexual man, he is dangling carrots in front of women. And I think that does make it look very skewed. However, when you looked at the data of who is sending the bribes, I was quite surprised to find out that 25% of the bribes are sent by women to men, which I thought was it's quite a lot higher than the sort of rates that he's seen in some of his other businesses, where it's 90% men. And he said there's more women have signed up than men to the service.
And you did some strategic testing, didn't you?
I did. I spent a couple of weeks using Carrot Dating, and I was expecting it to be quite seedy, and I think I had 9 bribes offered, and most of them were coffee or flowers or a meal, which aren't particularly beyond the realms of possibility might happen on a date anyway, although I'd probably insist on going Dutch. Yeah. But I did also get someone offering plastic surgery, which I didn't know whether to be impressed by the generosity or massively insulted.
I think that's a tugging on your hair in the playground, trying to get you to talk to them.
Yeah, perhaps.
Maybe that's their tactic.
And as Brandon pointed out, he's like, that might have been a kind of joke, you know, like a negging exercise to try and get...
Do they actually send you messages as well? Or they send a bribe and you accept it or deny it?
They send a bribe and you accept or deny the bribe.
Okay. Do you get to see their picture?
You get to see their picture, yeah.
And what they do in like a profile?
Yeah.
So you can say if it's, you know, wealthy oil tycoon seeks... woman for plastic surgery.
There's not even that level of detail in terms of what you put in your profile. It's just age, orientation.
I can afford dinner.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Well, the thing is, we wanted to talk about this as an extended section because, Liat, there was another story this week that we covered about a service called Love Room, which is a little bit like Airbnb, but instead of just having a bed, it might also have a naked person in that bed.
God. Yeah, this service very much sounds like it went down the same lines as Carrot Dating. Make a lot of fuss in the media, get some attention. So basically the premise is you get a room for free, yay, but you have to be attractive if you want that room, and as a host you have to be attractive too, which to me sounds incredibly creepy, and I'm not really sure why anybody would use it. However, the guy who started it, Josh Boccanegra, said he began this as a joke. He spoke to Forbes about it weeks ago, and apparently he set up the website, and it was pretty much just a landing page to see if anyone was interested. They just entered their email address and he could clock up who was interested. And what happened was the media hooked onto it and said, this is horrendous. So he said, great, I'm going to make it. Because he got loads of attention around it. And I think in the first 4 days, it got 1,100 registered users, which isn't like a massive amount. All appeared to be men.
Is that... Oh, right. I was going to say, is that... Is that people with rooms to offer?
Or it's people both. It's rooms to offer and people looking for a room. So it's a mixture of both, largely men. And just seems massively dangerous to me. It actually has a tip section instead of FAQs saying, you know, what to do to avoid... It says how to avoid creeps and other whacked situations.
Probably don't invite them into your house when you don't know them.
Exactly. It has things like, make sure that you have a working phone on you when meeting your host or guest, which is, you know, what you say when you might encounter a serial killer. So far... It seems to be working. It's getting lots of attention. I was in two minds whether or not to write about it at all. But it is interesting that these things keep appearing. And I don't really know what the purpose is, what the market is. I don't know if it's even supposed to be targeted at just having a one-night stand or like a weird relationship where you open up your home for a few weeks, Airbnb style.
I suppose it's a little bit more involved than something like Tinder, you know, which is that sort of... where you just, I think you like plus or minus people who are nearby you, who you might want to sleep with.
Slightly more involved. You have to like make the effort to go there. So if you want to go to Paris and have sex with an attractive person.
Throughout a lot of this, I keep just having memories of Badoo.
Yes.
You know, Badoo from...
Just find...
you know, it's that, it's all along that sort of that, those sorts of lines, isn't it?
Who does it appeal to?
Probably opportunistic women, wealthy, lonely men, and people who either have a lot of money or not very much.
I guess the problem is usually with these things, you at least get to meet the person before you end up going back to theirs, if you wanted to go back to theirs.
And yeah. in this case, turn up at the door.
Yeah, you
have to turn up. I think it's people that either want something, i.e., you know, if it's a woman who's after a room or money or some gifts or whatever it might be, or it's men who are just trying to woo people. It's not actually the people who just want to meet people, relationships, date. It's
the weird thing is that you actually have to answer, or you've got the option to answer a series of questions when you sign up, and they've got things like meat or veggie, puppies or kittens, and it's kind of like sounding like it wants to be some kind of dating site, but then it says, I think there's one that says, personal space or cuddles, which basically I read as, do you want a one night stand or do you want to hang around for like a couple of weeks in my room?
No, that actually to me suggests after you've had a one night stand, do you want me to stay or do you want me to go away?
Or, but it's
in the context
very,
of what these sites
like,
do.
It's like it's trying to be a bit of a dating site with those other options, but it, just in no way, shape or form is this, I don't know, would you use it?
Me? I keep all of my doors open. Liat, I close nothing off, but I do not have profiles on these sites, and I'll let that speak for itself. Well, let us know what you think. Would you use the service? Are you a woman looking for plastic surgery? Are you a man who thinks this is a great idea and has taken advantage of it? Or are you not? Let us know, podcast@wired.co.uk. We'll read some responses out next week, so do fire those in. It's time for some feedback. I'm going to scoot past the person who wrote in to ask us, do we want to buy some citric acid? The answer is no. But we did get one from Igor or Igor. I can't remember. Someone called Igor or Igor wrote in once and said we pronounced their name wrong. I don't know if this is the same one. But anyway, this person, this listener, wrote in and says, greetings, people. Love the poetry piece. I've written some poetry for you. Roses are red. He's right there. Violets are blue. Still right. Everyone loves Wired. You're an awesome crew. Faultless.
That's lovely.
It's great.
I can't fault that. It's great. My favourite for Valentine's Day is roses are red, violets are blue, all my base are belong to you. I put that out on Twitter every 14th of February. Never works. Anyway, hope your team's unicorn gets better soon. That's you, Leah. Tell her that vitamin C plus zinc improves the immune system.
Oh, God, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. Also, my little rant at Apple. I've got an iPhone 4 updated to iOS 7. The phone becomes very sluggish. Come on, Apple. I think they should warn users if the update is going to affect the performance of specific devices. Now, it sort of forces me to upgrade the device piece. Good point, but the iPhone 4 is pretty old. It's been out for quite a while in the tech world. It is a granddad. Its teeth are falling out. Its hair has long since departed this earth. It is a very good point. And Apple does have certain warnings on its website for things like how to best use battery life and optimize memory, but it definitely never mentions the performance factor. So I agree. They should probably do more for that. Now, you can write in with poetry or citric acid offers or whatever acid you want to sell us. podcast@wired.co.uk. Liat, we also have Facebook, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Check out our Facebook page /WiredUK.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter @WiredUK, or as Nate said, email us.
Yeah. Actually, another one. We've got like 100,000 fans on Google Plus.
Holy moly.
The moly is indeed holy. I've never seen a moly without holes.
We need to have a Google Hangout party with all those fans.
We definitely do. Well, we're going to pass 100,000 within the next couple of days, I think. google.com/+WiredUK. Stupid URL, but a very nice page. I have to say, there's a lot of cool, interesting, unique stuff on there. Do check it out. I think that's it, Liv. Is there anything else?
I think that's it, too.
Is that the lot?
Magical unicorn.
Yes. Shall we all trot off into the heavens and sleep on rainbows?
With zinc.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've finished this week's episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android, tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.
Question is, could I eat this cupcake in one
go?
Ultra swallow?
Gross. You'll be sick.
No.
Challenge accepted, Clark.